Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted and privileged to welcome a very accomplished professional and coach from Dubai, UAE, Lara Khoury. Lara, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh. It's such a privilege to be with you.
Thank you. Lara is the founder of There Is No Spoon Consulting and Training firm, which is a boutique experience creation and change leadership training firm. She's also the founding member of Women in CX, the community leader for the Women in CX Arabia chapter. She's a certified co-active coach, and she's a mentor with Regent's University London. Lara, what an amazing journey you've had so far. You know, very impressive. So let's start our conversation with There Is No Spoon.
Okay.
Tell me about this venture and this unique name.
Well, the venture itself is, it's the entirety of my life experiences that I brought together, and I realized this is what I want to do with the rest of my life. Right. And as we progress through the podcast, you'll see how a lot of my life experiences come into it. Mm-hmm. So really, it's not a job. It's not what I do. It's who I am. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I chose the name to reflect exactly that. So when you say, you know, tell me about the name, There Is No Spoon. Do you remember the movie The Matrix? Mm-hmm. It's 20 years old now, more than 20 years old. Mm-hmm. So there's a scene, and this is just in the first one, there's a scene where Neo is waiting to see the Oracle, mm-hmm. and there's a little boy who's dressed like a Tibetan monk. He's got a spoon in his hand, and he's bending the spoon. Yeah. And so Neo wants to do the same. He takes the spoon, tries to bend it, and it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And so the little boy looks at him and very calmly says, "You cannot bend the spoon. That is impossible. Mm-hmm. Instead, you have to realize the truth. There is no spoon. It is you that bends." So when I work with people, regardless on what we're working on, I always come with the approach, you cannot force people to behave in a way that you want them to behave, right? Whether they're your customers or your colleagues or your staff, it doesn't matter. All you can do is change how you present yourself, and they will then respond to that change. And I understood that change is a very scary thing. This is basic human psychology, right? Yeah. We don't like change. We're creatures of routine. So when I picked my brand colors, I also did that very deliberately because I wanted people to get excited about the possibilities that come along with change rather than look for the routine that comes with doing things the same way over and over and over again. Also because I'm very excited about what I do. And I wanted people to feel that same excitement and electricity.
Very interesting. Very interesting. And how do you define a change leadership training firm?
Right. So this is a question I get asked a lot. I'm really glad you asked it. So most people, when I say change leadership, they say change management. Mm-hmm. And that allows me to then show the difference between the two. Right. Change management is more about looking at your resources and understanding how to use them to achieve a certain goal. So let's say you're moving offices to a smaller space. Well, okay, you've got your utilities that need to move across. You've got your people, you've got your hardware, software, IT, all of that. And it's about how do we move across, what gets moved first so that we are efficiently operating in this new site. Change leadership is about connecting with people on an emotional level so that they want to move with you, whether that's to a new office or to a new way of doing things. It's about understanding what they expect, understanding, first of all, that they maybe don't want the change because, as we just said, people are afraid of change. For the most part, we don't like it. So understanding what it is that makes them uncomfortable about the change you're proposing, and then talking them through it, getting them to understand the need. More importantly, getting them to understand how it will impact them so that they are prepared mentally, emotionally, for the changes that they have to make to help you achieve your larger aims. So that's what change leadership is all about.
Wow. And can you, for my viewers and listeners, give me an example of how you have actually worked with an organization to change leadership, without any names, of course?
I've got so many examples of this, because every time an organization restructures, for example, there is an element of change that comes along with that. And the first time I did any change leadership with an organization was almost, 15 years ago now, where there was a restructure. It was a merger more than anything.
Right.
And the company that I was working with at the time, I was an employee at this company, had merged with another organization. And we were now going to move into the same office space. And when we did that, the next part of the change was, okay, you all need to work as a team to support each other's colleagues, upsell products and services, cross-sell products and services. And these are people who had never met, right? They knew each other theoretically, like, yes, we know this office exists somewhere else near us. And somebody needed to be the one who introduced them to each other, taught them about each other's products and services. And to be quite honest, this is usually the case. And this is why I put change leadership as something I offer. CEOs, regional directors, you will know this yourself very well. When there is a change, there are massive things that are happening with how they do what they do, the way they do their reporting, the P&L, all of that. So they have to take care of that.
Correct.
They don't necessarily have time, because there's only 24 hours in a day, to lead people through the change. So that's where I came in the very first time. I looked around and I said, you know what? I will do this. So I basically made friends with everybody on all of the teams, and I just started getting everyone together. And the next thing you know, management had realized what I was doing, and they said, okay, well, will you do this for the entire Middle East, Africa, and Caribbean? And I said, sure. And this was in the days before Zoom, and even in the days before BlackBerry, if anyone out there remembers BlackBerry.
I do.
I was training. You do. I was, you know, I was getting to know people virtually over the phone to introduce myself, introduce them to each other. And that was the first time I did that.
Amazing, amazing. And yet, Lara, most leaders don't like change. They like status quo or status quo ante.
Yes.
What are some of the challenges you face? You know, unless a company is in distress, what are some of the challenges you face in trying to convince leaders to make a change?
The biggest challenge I had was actually before COVID. And that was, as you just said, it was explaining to them the benefit that certain changes could bring. Because, yeah, by and large, leaders, like any other human being, on an emotional level, they don't want change. They value stability and routine. And on another level, the amount of work that comes along with any change is massive for them. So their responsibilities increase exponentially. And a lot of times I would see organizations doing the same thing over and over again. And because I'm from the outside looking in, I'm not ingrained in the way of doing things. It's easier for me to be able to see where can we have efficiencies, operational efficiencies. But yes, to get people to understand that is very, very difficult. After COVID though, and I really couldn't tell you what happened, Ashutosh, it's like I went to sleep in 2020 and I woke up in 2021 and suddenly people are more open to change. I suppose it's because change, huge global change, was forced on us and we had no choice. We've become more open to it, more open to listening. So now when I talk with, whether it's CEOs, CFOs, the entire leadership team, they've already made that journey from not wanting to change to understanding the benefit of change. And now all I have to do is say to them, okay, I see your journey. Here are the stops that we will make along the way to get you from where you are to where you want to be.
Fascinating. So let's now move on, Lara, and talk a little bit about you as a coach.
Okay.
I'm also a coach, but I've never heard the term co-active coach. Help me understand, what does a co-active coach mean and do?
So I hadn't heard the term co-active coach until, well, until just before I got my coaching qualification. And that happened after I got a postgraduate in what is now called general human services, but basically counseling and psychology. And I wanted some practical experience to go along with that. Mm-hmm. And a psychiatrist that I know had said to me, well, there's this place in Dubai Knowledge Village. It was called mm-hmm. Knowledge Village. Now it's called Knowledge Park. Mm-hmm. They're called CTI, I think. Check mm-hmm. them out. Mm-hmm. I said, okay. So I researched. And at the time, we're going back 9 years, 9.5 years, actually, by the time I started. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, well, they've come recommended. I'll try them out. Mm-hmm. And what I hadn't expected is exactly what makes a co-active coach mm-hmm. co-active. Mm-hmm. And I felt really silly, to be quite honest, because really the clue is in the name, mm-hmm. where we're not sitting back and listening to someone. So when people think of coaches, for the most part, they think of life coaches or business coaches who sit and listen to you and then give you advice, more mm-hmm. like a mentor than anything.
Correct.
A co-active coach is someone who goes through the journey with you.
Wow.
So for example, I do know of a co-active coach who does all of his sessions while he's hiking with his mm-hmm. colleagues, mm-hmm. With his coachees, mm-hmm. right? So they are moving together. They are experiencing mm-hmm. the coaching relationship together in that environment. I know of coaches, myself included, mm-hmm. who sometimes get quite emotional with our coachees because the tools that we're using to coach them are tools that also impact us while we're using them. There's one coachee I remember, I actually got very frustrated for him mm-hmm. while we were going through the coaching. So I had to take a step back and sort of breathe and recalibrate myself to continue. And I understand there is a difference between co-active, so being actively involved, and overstepping professional boundaries. There are very clear professional boundaries yeah. that we do not overstep. And part mm. of becoming certified as a co-active coach mm. is knowing how to make that balance. Co-active coaches also, we don't necessarily coach in a clinical setting. Mm-hmm. I've coached people at the beach. I coached one gentleman who had said to me, the only reason I did this was because he was adamant that he wanted to experience it there and then. We were in a restaurant.
Wow.
And he said, well, do it now. And I looked around and I said, are you sure you want me to coach you in this kind of a setting? Mm-hmm. And he said, yes. So I said, okay. So there I was, we were both enjoying dinner, enjoying, other people's company yeah. and the coaching yeah. happened there.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And, given the fact that you do so much work with change leadership, mm-hmm. how does that experience help you with your being a co-active coach?
Oh, that's a beautiful question. Mm-hmm. I don't believe I would be able to do what I do the way I do it if mm-hmm. I didn't have this qualification. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I got a certification to use a second coaching methodology, a second coaching tool called MAPSTELL.
Okay.
MAPSTELL. Mm-hmm. And that also will bring an added layer of depth mm. to the way that I do what I do, because mm. whether I'm coaching for change or whether I'm working with someone for change leadership, or they've come to me and they've said, well, we want to improve our customer experience or our employee experience, there is always an element of change. When you want to improve something, you must change.
Correct.
And so the elements of coaching, I bring different tools in at different times, depending on who I'm working with. Mm. Sometimes I'm coaching the entire team through the change. Sometimes, as was the case with one client, I was teaching the leadership team mm-hmm. how to use some of the tools on a rather superficial level, because I can't give them a coaching qualification,
yeah. Yeah.
but just teaching them how to use some of these tools, how to, for example, position things in their internal communications, how to understand by engaging with their teams during the change mm. where people were uncomfortable and then being able to address that. So sometimes mm. I'm teaching people how to use elements of it, and then they go off and they do it very successfully. And sometimes I'm coaching the team myself.
Amazing.
I wouldn't be able to do that. Yeah.
No, amazing. And my next question to you, when I was reading about you,
mm-hmm.
was that you focus on a few areas, which is building strengths, understanding where people may be stuck, and identify clear steps to build leadership skills and confidence, and building mm-hmm. high performing and values assigned teams. Can you explain each of these to me with an example?
Yeah, sure. So building strengths, the first example that comes to mind is really someone I'm very, very proud of. She's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. When I started working with her, mm-hmm. And I was working within that company, mm-hmm. she had been an executive level, so basically an entry level person mm-hmm. for about 7 years mm-hmm. with different companies. She'd never worked with a budget. She'd never run a campaign. We were in the marketing team. Mm-hmm. And shortly after I joined, there was a restructure and we had to divide our roles and responsibilities in a different way. And she said to me very clearly, I don't like doing PR. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk to the PR team. This does not interest me. I said, okay, fine. I will do that. You do something else. And then I was moved again a couple of years later, even further away from her. And here's the interesting thing. When we talk about building strengths, whether we're talking about ourselves or someone is talking about us, mm-hmm. we always look at ourselves in a sort of black and white way. I have strengths and I have weaknesses.
Correct.
I don't look at people as having weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And this is one element of coactive coaching that I always bring. We have strengths, which are the things we are either naturally good at or we enjoy, so we put more effort into them. Mm-hmm. And we have things that we're not naturally good at or we don't enjoy as mm-hmm. much, so we don't put that much effort into them.
Yeah.
PR was that for this part, for this lady. Mm-hmm. And so it came a time where I knew that she was going to have to do it because I was being moved further away. I could no longer do that. Mm-hmm. And so I had gotten to know her quite well at this point. I knew what she didn't like about PR, but I also knew what she liked about her job. Mm-hmm. So I was able to coach her through. And then one fine day, she comes out of a meeting with the PR team and she looks at me with this huge smile on her face. She says, I love that. It was so much fun. Mm-hmm. And I just looked at her and I started laughing. And she said, yes, I know how that sounds, but it's true. And by the time I left that organization, she had been promoted solely on her merit to being the regional marketing manager for the Middle East, Africa, and Southeast Asia.
Wow.
And that was just, you know, building on strengths that she naturally had and helping her build others that she didn't naturally have. Mm. And it's a similar thing when it comes to understanding where people are stuck. Mm. So there's a lady that I worked with as well. And she's the one who told me that she was stuck. I didn't know her well enough at the time to make that determination. Mm-hmm. She had seen how I was working with other colleagues, mentoring them, coaching them. And so she came to me, she said, look, I feel stuck. I know I'm not on your team. I know we don't work closely together, but will you, after work hours, help me out? I said, sure. Mm-hmm. And as we were coaching, so she was also executive entry level, and she was in a very customer support kind of a role. Mm-hmm. And as I was getting to know her and asking her questions, using coactive techniques, asking her questions about what she enjoyed, what she didn't enjoy, that sort of thing, it became very clear that there was a rather large part of her that enjoyed research and analysis. Mm. She liked understanding the reasons behind why decisions were being made. Mm. Whereas in her role, the decision was being made and she was told, do this. Mm. So we worked together for a while, and eventually she came to me one day. She said, I've decided to resign. Mm-hmm. I've gotten a role with a completely different organization. I will be starting from entry level again, but this role is a research and analysis role, and I really want it. So she applied for that. She got that. She resigned. A year later, she was promoted to manager of her team, because that was a natural thing that she had. And she was just feeling stuck because she didn't know that about herself. We got her there to that understanding. It got her where she is today. And when I saw her shortly after she began working, even before she got the promotion, she was holding her head high. She was walking into a room with a big smile on her face, full of confidence. Mm. Whereas when we worked together, she would hunch over her desk and just do her work and leave and was very quiet. Mm. So the confidence that she had in her abilities now that she was in a place that was good for her was phenomenal.
Mm.
And then the last one you asked about was building high-performing, values-aligned teams.
Yeah.
So there was a huge element of change leadership with this example. It was with an organization that had a department that they were completely changing two things. Mm. first of all, they were changing the services that this department offered globally. Mm-hmm. So it's a multinational. All the organizations that I've worked with have mainly been multinationals. Mm-hmm. And so I work with people all over the world. So this one was no exception, multinational, changing things on a global scale, mm-hmm. but also setting a regional income target. Mm-hmm. So it was no more that the office in Qatar or that particular team in Qatar would have to achieve that income target and the team here. It was no, as a region working together, mm-hmm. you have one target to achieve. And again, this is with people who hadn't necessarily ever worked together. They knew of each other theoretically, but they'd never. And now you have to get them to trust each other, to like each other enough, to want to work together. And I had 6 months before the changes were due to become the reality. Mm-hmm. So in those 6 months, I worked very hard to, first of all, understand the processes that these teams worked with, mm-hmm. finance, procurement, all of that, mm-hmm. and to understand in the different offices how those ways of working were different, mm-hmm. because what I then needed to do was get a regional agreement on this is how we're now going to do things, mm-hmm. but also I had to get to know the people individually, mm-hmm. so I could see where does this person have natural strengths and talents, mm-hmm. that complement that person. How do I get them to work together, mm-hmm. to support each other so that at the end of the day, as a team, they're achieving that target that they have to achieve? I can't go into too much detail here, yeah. but it was a lot of work, getting to know people, mm-hmm. getting to understand their fears and their concerns with this change. Mm-hmm. What I will say is that by using the coactive coaching techniques, by using my experiences of restructures up until that point, I'd been involved for almost 10 years by that point, I knew what I was doing, and we overachieved on our income target by 25%, wow. taking it quite comfortably from a six-figure income to a seven-figure income that we generated for the region.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Lara, I've got time for a few more questions, and my viewers and listeners love to get to know my guest a little better. So I've got a couple of questions for you that I call personal questions. My first question to you is, what are the core values you believe in?
Oh, I love that question. And I love that question because these are the values on which I purposely built what I do now. Okay. Passion, positivity, mm-hmm. and putting people first.
Okay.
Always. Mm-hmm. I love the energy and the excitement that mm-hmm. comes from being passionate about something.
Yeah.
I love the solution-oriented perspective that comes from having a positive outlook. Mm. And I value people very highly. Mm. I value relationships. I value people's comfort. Everything that I do is to make sure that people, whether they are customers, members of staff, leadership, executive, doesn't matter who, mm. is to make sure that they are comfortable, happy, fulfilled, feeling valued. So passion, positivity, putting people first, top
Fantastic.
Three.
Fantastic. My next question is, given the amazing amount of work that you do and you're working with people around the world, what does success mean to Lara?
Oh. You know, that's something that I've been thinking about for a while, because what success meant to Lara 6 years ago is absolutely not what it means to me today. It's probably not what it's going to be 6 years from now. So, you know, 6 years ago, success meant climb the corporate ladder, become a C-level individual. Mm. Today, success means having the freedom to make my own decisions about how I do what I do. And interestingly, it's the freedom to define success according to my own terms, not someone else's. Right. So today, that's what success means to me, is freedom to choose.
What a great response. And my last question to you, Lara, and this is for the many, many people who will listen to our conversation. Mm-hmm. Based on your amazing journey and all the great work that you're doing, what would you say are three lessons you would like our viewers and listeners to take away from your journey and from our conversation?
Three lessons. Mm-hmm. Being a manager doesn't mean being better than someone else.
Right.
When you are privileged to be in a managerial position or a leadership position, it's a huge responsibility. So please take that opportunity and that privilege to understand the people that you're working with. You're not their manager because you're better than them. You're their manager because you have skills that complement theirs and that can lift them up. So that's the first one. So appreciate everyone. The second thing is know yourself. Because without knowing what you are comfortable doing, what you enjoy doing, what your strengths are, and what your areas for improvement are, it is very difficult for you to go through life growing positively. And I see this, I used to see this a lot with people who didn't know and they were miserable in their lives. So please make the opportunity, make the time to either get a coach or do some introspection so that you get that knowledge of self that will help you grow. And the third one is understand that what got you here will not get you there.
Well said.
We constantly have to learn and improve. Even myself, I mean, Ashutosh, you've been so gracious with your compliments on my journey. I'm still journeying and I make mistakes all the time.
Absolutely.
But I'm because I know that what got me here, speaking with you today, is not what's going to get me to where I want to be in a month, 6 months, 5 years.
Well said.
So know well that.
Said. Well said. Lara, on that note, and your amazing three core values of passion, positivity, and putting people first, and your three amazing words of wisdom, which is appreciate yourself, know yourself, and learn constantly. Thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me about There Is No Spoon. And I was fascinated with how you got that this phrase from The Matrix, the movie. And, you know, when as you were talking, I suddenly was relating to the little boy, the monk, who was actually talking about the spoon. Thank you for your amazing amount of knowledge that you have shared with us on coaching.
Thank you.
Thank you for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Thank you so much. It's been such an honor to be here with you today.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.